This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. You're probably waiting. It's been 10 minutes past 4 o'clock. And of course, yes, we're on at last. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. We wouldn't have, you know...
It's very unconventional today.
Yes, and you know, we wouldn't have skipped the show even if we were having technical problems.
Well, I know.
We would have fixed it to make sure you got on air.
Because it is just simply just overwhelmingly popular.
Yeah.
Ooh, the show. You or me? Hey, which are us? Us. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right.
Right. You know, actually, that got me a bit nervous about, you know, we are all so excited about talking about today's issues. And then it will be a shame if it's due to technicality we have to abandon the topic.
But we're back on now.
We're back on now. And the heat is on our guest.
And she always comes in, you know, nervous because, you know, it's not an easy topic, really, most of the time for you.
Well, she's nervous because for a change, she's being grilled.
She always is being grilled. Whether in the courts or not. Sharon Palani, our medical legal expert, back in the studio because we were reading that there seems to be a 10% increase in medical legal claims in the UK. And we're wondering whether what's happening here in Malaysia. Our phone lines, of course, are open. Once again, it's 0377 109000. You can tweet to BFM Radio or text 0162019000. So, Sharon, you're the one who recommended these two articles, actually. For a change, she became the producer, George.
We took
the back seat and decided to drive the angle up.
Well, because the last few ones we talked about, like, you know, transfusions, we talk about, you know, rights to dies and that sort of thing, and then she needed to come in with textbooks to show that she to ensure that all these medicals, legalities, the technicalities were all well answered. This time she's not here with a textbook.
No, she's not, because she has full control of it.
Absolutely, she knows this topic inside out.
Except for she doesn't know what I have to ask.
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. Okay. So this makes today very exciting for us.
Sharon, two articles which you shared with us. One is a boy in the UK was left disabled during birth and he could receive a record £15 million in compensation by the NHS.
Yes, the reason I shared was its history in England and Wales to award such high amount for a cerebral palsy claim.
I mean, before we actually talk about such high amount, I mean, this is record £15 million, right? Okay. And then the first thing I said was that is that enough to care for a child for the rest of his life? So I actually thought, you know, it was lower than I anticipated, because you always hear about Americans kind of like a litigation culture and things like that. Mayor, do you think 15 million was a phenomenal amount of money, because this was record making in the UK?
It is a lot, George.
Yeah, so you think that
I
is
think it's a lot. Okay.
What
because I'm thinking if all cerebral palsy patients could find some avenue of suing, then what happens?
What happens to the healthcare?
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
It will bankrupt the healthcare quite easily, right?
It will bankrupt.
Okay. I mean, the interesting thing, this was picked by you, you know, Sharon. Obviously, this is a story that the two issues in here, which is interesting, that was reported by The Telegraph. Number one, is a 12-year-old boy left catastrophically disabled by being starved of oxygen during his birth, is expecting to receive almost 15 million. So what comes across my mind is after 12 years, then we come to that. So I would like you to explain a little bit about the legality of side of things. And this second thing, which is where I have all my claws out, is that within this, it actually reported to say NHS set aside quarter of its budget for medical litigations and lawyers seizing lion's shares of the payout in NHS negligence cases. So we would like to hear your side of the story.
Well, my side of the story is going to be a mixed side, because primarily I do defence work, but I also do patients work.
Right.
So the big payouts are justified by what the patient needs during trial. So, for example, for cerebral palsy, it will be the future cost of care for that child.
Right.
Now, that can go very high depending on the type of injury the child had and the type of care he would need and the lifespan. Medical science have improved lifespan for these patients, and that would mean some of them may live as any normal person.
Right.
So that explains the length of time and the amount.
Right.
Now, I want to quote something from a very prominent writer for medical law from England. She says, she actually highlights what politicians in UK believe, that gold-digging compensation claims incited by greedy lawyers are damaging public service. including the NHS. So if you take this 14...
They're blaming the lawyers again.
And not necessarily.
Well, it's a culture, isn't it? It's a litigation culture. You know, that's interesting because I would like, Sharon and I had a wee chat earlier on and said, you do realise that we're going to incite a lot of people in Klang Valley to ring in because we want to find out what's your view about litigation culture in across the world, in Malaysia specifically. Is it over litigation?
Litigious.
Or are we just right? And what's going on? What's your view on that? Okay. And then, you know, that will be interesting.
So the number is 0377-109000. Give us a call. Share your thoughts with us. You know, Sharon, we have a few cases here in Malaysia which are very prominent, which I think medical legal experts go back to all the time. One is called the Bolam Principle. Am I correct?
Medical legal lawyers. Yes. We go back to the Bolam Principle, which actually sets the standard that the doctor actually has to come up in realms of diagnosis and treatment. So if it's an acceptable standard of practice and the doctor in question has come up to that standard of practice in the realm of diagnosis and treatment, the doctor is not negligent.
Let's just take George for an example.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, right.
Yes, George.
Put me in the limelight.
So how do we
new?
Fit George into the Bolam Principle?
You bring in another urologist practicing.
My peer.
Your peer who's practicing.
Same level.
Practicing in Kuala Lumpur.
Right.
Who would have looked at the same case and would, if you would have acted differently from Dr. George, but if that difference in his action is not an acceptable standard, then therefore he's negligent.
So essentially, the definitions, the very definitions of that negligence is defined by what is your deviation from your standards practice defined by your peers.
Correct. Diagnosis and treatment.
And that is the so-called Bolan.
What about the patient? Everybody is different.
Yes.
What standard may not apply to various, individuals?
The clinical judgment that the doctor makes based on the case notes in front of him, based on the patients in front of him, the physiological as well as the anatomical, as well as the patient in wholesome, that is the clinical judgment the doctor makes. And you take another urologist looking at the same data before him and the same patient with all this, and if he would have acted differently, in him acting differently, if it's not accepted by his peers, then he is negligent.
No, right. Okay. So essentially, if, let's say, for example, Mira put me on a limelight, if I did a kidney operation, which is supposed to be a very straightforward operation, and for whatever reasons, a patient actually turned for the worse and
react differently.
Let's say, for example, suddenly had a heart cardiac event or stroke or something like that, and eventually all the notes is open to scrutiny, and then if this was brought to court and if that is defined as negligence, is because if one of the things that I did deviated from what the standard should be. Is that right?
Yes, the standard of what another urologist would have done.
But another person will argue that, another urologist would not do something like that. So how do you
do something like that?
Right, okay. Because in medical practice, for example, if there is a new technology, for example, that when it comes in where everyone has different views on different things.
So no experimenting on patients. Huh?
Right.
How do you test new technology then?
That's a good question. Because you see...
How do you get doctors accustomed to new technology?
The medical innovation. How doctors are going to, innovate
adapt
their medical practice. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to say a tick box approach like I do 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that is an acceptable practice, and I have this mole in terms of clinical practice guideline, which another doctor have to use robotically, then you are stifling medical innovation. Because a patient that appears before you may have many parameters which are not the same.
Mm.
However, when you look at the medical records, and if that acceptable standard by another urologist, that's where the medical expert opinion comes in, is where it does not withstand, logical analysis, and he goes on his own, frolicking with his own, then that would clearly be negligent.
Okay, right. Put it this way, if let's say this particular case that is happening, and then what one peer doctor would say, look, this is a acceptable risk, and then nothing else Dr. George is doing differently. But the family member can argue that when risk were explained to my relative, that wasn't part of the discussion. So there were no form of informed consent. So there are two sides of story.
There's a different area of the law altogether.
But would that constitute negligence?
Yes, disclosure of risk. All material risk has to be disclosed to the patient. And if you fail to disclose, our law, which is Fufiona in Malaysia, which follows an Australian principle, Rogers and Whittaker, says that the court is entitled to find you negligent because it's no longer the Bolam test. Another doctor will not be able to say, look, if I was in Dr. George's position, I wouldn't have told this too. Because the court has taken back that power and said, look, when it concerns disclosure, the patient is entitled to a certain amount of knowledge and all material risk has to be...
So even though a peer has defined that Dr. George hasn't done anything wrong, in fact, he's...
In terms of disclosure.
His craft is up to scratch, complete gold standard, but... What he didn't do was disclose the necessary risk or convey it effectively to the patient, and that constitutes a negligence.
Unless the doctor can claim what we call a therapeutic privilege. Now, a therapeutic privilege is when the doctor feels, if I tell you this risk, you may decide against it, and that will harm your life. Between two harms, the court still gives you the opportunity to choose which is the lesser harm.
Well, this looks like the ball is in different courts, one and another.
It feels like I'm doing a submission in court.
Is that the reason why this took 12 years to come to the eventuality?
No, not necessarily. Cerebral palsy claims involves children who have got brain injury. They would probably take some time, probably... Therefore, there's a lot of getting up to do.
Right.
Now, you have to see the pediatric neurologist to assess the extent of the injury. And then, before that, a statement of claim can be established. England has a few protocols that you have to, like clinical negligence protocol. After all these has been exhausted, by the time you come to court, the child may, in some cases, grow up to be about 10 to 12. Mm-hmm. In Malaysia, we have had cases where children, from my experience, we have had where patients were about 10 to 12,
mm-hmm.
but younger patients as well.
And these days with, you know, teams in operating theatres working together, it's multidisciplinary.
Yes.
Right? You have the cardiologist, you have the obstetrician, gynecologist.
So who do you blame?
Yeah. So who do you blame?
Who do you blame?
Who is the captain of this ship?
All right. Depends on who is the captain of a ship in a appendix surgery.
Okay.
Who's the captain of the ship?
I deal with different organs.
Okay, so okay. You should be able to answer that.
Right, okay.
Prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer.
In my definition,
is whoever admitted the patient and take charge of the patient's care. So if I have, that's why I take this very seriously. If someone actually comes under my care, you know, I take this very seriously because I assume anything that happens to this person, I will be the person who bears full responsibility. However, when I worked in government hospital and also in the UK, is that whenever that happens, it's always admitted under the team, a urology team. And then when I was given this impression that if anything happens to the patient, it's under Crown Indemnity. I would like you to tell me, is that true? Like, you know, if let's say...
Crown Indemnity. What is that?
The government takes, the NHS takes the bulk. It's the same in Malaysia if you go to a public hospital.
I was going to say, there are no laws regulating rights of patients in the public sector in Malaysia.
There are no laws regulating patients'
rights.
There are policies and procedures, but are there laws?
Unlike the private sector, which has got a private healthcare act, mm-hmm. They don't have like public healthcare act. But it's the common law that governs the entire medical negligence issues. So when you talk about...
So if let's say I operate on a patient in a government hospital.
Yes.
And then if the patient sues, if the patient doesn't sue me, the patient sues the hospital.
The patient will sue you as the perpetrator of the tort, as well as your employer, which is the government of Malaysia. And in some cases, the pengarah, the director of the hospital.
Right, so captain of the ship for that appendix operation, who is it then? Is it Pengarah?
I have an example. I just heard of a case recently of a mother who's full-term pregnant, needs a C-section because she has complications. They found out that she has a hole in the heart. So the multidisciplinary case is, OT and operation going to take place. So they have the cardiologist in place. They have the neonatal practitioners in place. They have the OBGYN in there. Of course, you have... So who's the captain of the ship?
Depends on which part. If you're looking at the obstetric issue, it would be the OBGYN.
So it depends now what happens.
Yeah.
If baby comes out all right, that's fine. And if something goes wrong with the heart, then the cardiologist is...
will have to set in.
Of the mummy's heart, then, you know.
And if anything's wrong with the baby, the pediatrician or the neonate doctor is there. So things like this, it depends on the situation. I may go in just for an appendix. I may go in for a gynae issue. But in the midst of it, the gynae may find out that there's some surgical issues. And he may want to call in a general surgeon for help. Then the general surgeon will take over and see what needs to be done.
So it's quite a fluid, dynamic kind of like responsibility. It's not like captain of a ship. You sign on a dotted line and that's it. You are responsible for the whole thing. Because presumably all these will be open to scrutiny in the court of law.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when I think the primary thing that you have to bear in mind is that doctors are here to help the patient. So when things go wrong, the law would expect, what did the doctor do? If you're not practiced or skilled in that area, what did you do to call someone who is?
Right. Okay. Very fair. I mean, and that sort of scrutiny obviously is open to
debate.
Yes. And because you have two sides, one is debating for and then one's debating against. And how complicated is that when you face that sort of cases in the court?
It is very difficult, because as medicine becomes it progresses, I always tease my doctors and say, one day we're going to have a thumb specialist, because doctors are specialising so much.
The left thumb.
You forgot about the subspecialisation
of the left thumb in the nail. Right.
Because we have gone from, So it's just too difficult.
Well, then if this is so difficult for the doctors, the lawyers also have to be experts, and the judges also have to understand what we're talking about here.
I think I have a job.
You do
Maybe
have a
I
job.
Maybe I can help communicate science to the judges.
Right.
We'll come back. And discuss this. Are the patients in this country given a fair trial as far as the judiciary is concerned? Are they properly equipped with the right knowledge? That's up next. Our phone lines are open. If you want to give us a call, what do you think? Do you have much of a say as far as medical legal problems are concerned? It's 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio, together with Sharon Palani, our medical legal expert. Poor Sharon, she always gets to come in to answer all these very difficult questions. We have our phone lines open if you want to talk to us about claims, medical legal claims in this country and how it actually works. Give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Now, Jess Puvin is saying he has seen three cases where doctors have been negligent and have caused patients to die, and nothing could be done. How do you empower people to understand this?
That's a great question, isn't it?
And to do something about it.
Well, I would say, as a medical legal lawyer, not an expert, Mira, I have to make that qualification. Now, when patients come, meet with an accident, you must understand the doctors go out there to try to help.
Of course.
And accidents do happen. But the choices that the patients have are many. If you are in a private centre, you can always go and exercise what we call a grievance mechanism under the private hospital. If you're in the public sector, exercise the grievance mechanism in the public sector. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, when you have a case, when you think that the doctor is negligent and you suspect the doctor may have done something wrong, it's good to open a communication with the doctor and see what actually happened.
Right.
And I would not encourage litigation as the first method to proceed. I would ask the patient to go back to the hospital, try to find out what really happened. And, in cases where they say that the patient died and it's all because of the doctors.
Complications.
It is not necessarily, because there are some, we must bear in mind, patients see the doctors because they are ill to begin with.
Right.
There may be something inherent in the patient that needs to be investigated.
Yeah. So, I mean, like obviously this this person who texted felt that there are three cases. And then, communication, despite that, still feel that there may be issues that is unresolved. And, in the UK, people say they go to Citizen Advice Bureau in order to get help. But do you not think in Malaysian system that if you do not think you are well equipped with resources, you might be compromised like that? What do you say to something like that?
For legal aid, patients who have got no money to actually instruct a lawyer.
I was just going to ask, it's a costly affair.
It is, because first you need
to medicate. Because the lion's share is going to the lawyers.
And he's holding me, no.
I mean, 12 years is a long time.
12 years is
so you need to have a lot of energy and not resources to carry on.
Yes, but you see, medical evidence, it's all about forensic work now. The doctors, the experts have to look at the medical records. They can go into thousands of pages to actually decipher what went wrong 5-6 years ago.
Right.
They would need multidisciplinary. They would need a pediatric neurologist to see the prognosis. They would need other areas, expertise, the anesthetist, what went wrong. So these can increase the cost. But if patients feel they have a claim and they actually need help, Bar Council runs a legal aid centre.
Right.
So they can always go there and see, you know, if they don't have the funds and see if there's any other lawyers who are looking at it on a legal aid basis. Or because a contingency...
Is that equivalent to a citizen advice bureau?
It is. Well, it is, yes, but they do have a means test, meaning they have to pass the means test before they can actually get that advice.
Mm. You wouldn't qualify, George.
Definitely not.
All right, okay.
But start the communication with the hospital.
Okay. Right, okay.
Fair enough. Robert, how are you today?
Afternoon, Robert.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Lawyer, I would like to speak to the lawyer.
Yes, go ahead.
What happens when negligence is committed by a doctor? Will they try to cover up the case or are they obliged to inform the patient?
Mm-hmm.
That's another question. Is it true that in public hospitals, every year there are many private settlement cases?
Great question. Okay, thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, obviously the natural thing that patient would imagine is that if a doctor makes mistakes, you know, potentially that the doctor is trying to cover up. So how do you ensure that doctors don't cover up? This is the first question. Secondly,
do you tell the patients?
Do you tell the patients?
Well,
who you advise to, right?
Well, it depends, because see, negligence in terms of legal meaning is different from what people out there would say, you know,
perceived negligence.
Mm-hmm. Before you can actually say the doctor is negligent, an expert has to look at it. His peer would have to look at it.
In fact, actually,
if you leave scissors in the tummy, that's different.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Have you come across cases like in Malaysia?
Not scissors, though, but some other things.
Telephone. These fake things.
So
if it was clear cut like that,
yeah, it was clear cut. You leave gauzes, you leave things. You know, that is clear cut negligence, but not in cases where the doctor offered this line of, you know, treatment.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know, I like the way you said earlier on that, you know, open communication is the true step. The first step in understanding what's going on, because the breakdown in communication is the most common problems leading to litigation. Because I do come across complications and things like that. The first thing I do is sat down with a patient, write a thorough medical report, and actually went through line by line with a patient to say, at which part do you not think I have actually you disagree with my actions? And then so that at least we would come to an agreement where I can understand where your concerns are, and you can actually have an opportunity to find out what actually were the problems that arise.
This is post or pre-surgery?
Usually post. That is after a problem has arisen.
Okay.
That goes back to the ethics of the doctor. The doctor is there. He doesn't mean harm. He's trying to help you. And if something goes wrong, that does not mean automatic negligence. There can be some other reasons that anything can go wrong. We are not robotic machines. Yeah. Fluid body with changes with time.
That's right. And what was Robert's second question?
Whether there's a lot of out-of-court settlement or just settlement between the hospitals and patients.
For the public sector, what I'm aware of, there are. Of course, medical accidents is in the rise, and there are the settlement cases. But because of...
NHS put aside like a quarter of the expenses for this. I mean, then does Malaysian government put aside a huge sum of money for this?
In the recent years, it is increasing, so I would suspect that they will. I have a data from NHS. For year 2000, they put 2.6 billion aside. In year 2010, they put 14.9 billion.
Wow. Okay.
Now, let's look at it.
Is it how much we put aside for healthcare?
Right.
Full stop.
That'll be a big question. Now, imagine...
No, but does that mean there were a lot of cases?
Increasing amount of claims, as well as increasing damages, just like this case, 14.8 million.
So it doesn't really mean that there are more cases, necessarily.
Not necessarily.
But the claims could be a lot more.
Because of the nature of injury.
Ooh.
No.
So now that has to be checked, because otherwise that 14.8 billion can be put to provide an extra surgeon,
of course,
create a new neonatal unit,
of course, yeah,
you know, and support preventive medicine. So that is the balance that the courts will have to do. which we hope they will.
Because once you, you know, go ahead and sort of come up with a claim like £15.6 million, that sets that's precedent.
Yes, and the one that comes after will quote this case and say,
exactly.
Look. But you see, all said and done, in Malaysia, the judges have been, because we have got a case, which I can't dwell further than the fact that because it's in appeal stage, where the judge awarded £1.2 million, but parallel to the same type of injury, I mean, not the same type, parallel to the type of injury, a birth injury, another case, another high court awarded almost £7 million.
Wow.
So we've got two disparity. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's always the position about the nature of injury, the extent of injury.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yong, how are you today?
Afternoon, Yong.
Your question?
Yeah, Dr. George and, you know, yeah, and also, sorry, I forgot the other doctor's name.
Sharon, she's a lawyer.
Okay, Sharon, I thought it was Susan, sorry. The point the earlier caller brought out is so interesting. I think it's a fodder for Hollywood movies.
Good.
And you asked our viewpoint. Yes, it's good that to have this check and balances as a, what's the doctor's name?
Sharon.
Sharon brought out, mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, it would deteriorate, you see, because in years past, we have cases that, you know, instruments were in the patient's body.
Mm.
So these are sort of the check and balances that we need.
Okay, thank
Yong,
you.
Yong, what do you think about the litigation culture in Malaysia?
There was a point you brought up earlier, you know, that people who have lack of resources, you know, to pursue such things. Previously, we have one representative in a city centre. He did a good job, but now that he has moved on to another area, so I think we need this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with this whole rise or increasing nature of medical legal cases, do we blame the medical fraternity? Who do we blame for this?
We should not blame. Accidents happen, and if I think that we start blaming, we are just going to make the doctors, you know, practice defensive medicine. And defensive medicine is going to cost the patient. Because doctors, once he practices defensive medicine, he's going to do what is legally safe, not what is medically safe. And we don't want our doctors to think like that. He will order more tests. He will keep the patient unnecessarily. It will increase cost. It will create it will break down the doctor-patient relationship.
That's a fair point, isn't it? Yeah, because, you know, presumably a culture like USA, for example, doctors will practice defensive medicine. For example, you know, before you actually see the patient, you would just do scan head to toe and then actually do all the blood tests first, because just a screening test will do that. And in fact, you're right. You know, that will increase the cost of the healthcare.
And will we see doctors specializing in safer areas, as in, you know, you will see less spinal surgeons, you will see less
obstructives,
OBGYN.
And doctors will be presumably less inclined to take on new technology to help patients, because the risk of taking on new technology, you will be open to scrutiny to say, how many have you actually done?
Yes.
And how do
Which
you
Which I ask all the doctors who come in and talk about new technology. Right. How often have you done this, right?
Yes.
We have another question from Chua. He says, can the immediate relative of the patient request not to disclose the diagnosis of a patient, for an example, cancer, to the patient because it makes the patient very anxious and it worries them. So then what happens if something goes wrong?
Well, the relatives can tell the doctor, look, if you tell her that she's got cancer, she'll probably go home and commit suicide. Yeah. So that's a risk of she taking her life. Now, the doctor who assesses the condition will have to look at the patient and then assess by disclosing, will it harm her? If it does not, in his medical opinion, it doesn't, he's duty-bound to tell her.
Okay, yeah. All right. Up next, we'll find out whether or not the doctor-patient bond has now been replaced by an unemotional, commercial, business link, like, you know, we'll ask Dr. George.
Typical. Typical Mira's kind of statement.
After
right?
a quick market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, and if you have just joined us, welcome. It is Dr. George Lee in the studio with us, and we're discussing medico-legal claims with Sharon Palani, who's a medico-legal lawyer.
Thank you.
Our phone lines are open. It's 0377 109000. If you want to share your thoughts on medical legal claims here in Malaysia, we kicked off the discussion with the UK expecting a 10% increase in medical legal claims, and that we're trying to figure out why that seems to be the case and whether or not Malaysia is very much far behind, and I don't think we are. We will probably just follow trends as we move along, probably just at a slower pace. George, do you feel the doctor-patient bond has now been replaced by a very unemotional, commercial, business-like link?
I didn't realise that was it. Well,
are you heavily insured?
Well, I am insured, but
it's a requirement that all doctors
have to be insured. It's a requirement for
private practitioner doctor
to insured, and then and in fact there is a banding system assessing your risk. Like, for example, if you were a plastic surgeon, you're quite higher up. That your urologist is considered a high risk. Then we have high risk, mega high risk, and extreme high risk. Guess which specialty will be the extreme high risk? That they don't even give you the quotation of how much your cost is going to be. This is on negotiation.
Wow.
Which specialty do you think?
Heart.
Obstetrics.
Mm. Ah, right.
Yeah. So
I mean, with this 14.8.
That's right. It's like, you know, my insurance premium. It's like, you know, it's probably about five times of what I pay. So, you know, you're right. It creates a lot of anxiety. And then that, to some extent, you know, worries your doctors can potentially change their practice when it comes to that.
Edwin, how are you today?
Yeah.
Afternoon, Edwin.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Your question.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah, it's about something that I have been waiting to find out all these years.
Yes.
I went for a checkup.
Yes.
At the hospital with this.
Edwin, you need to turn off your radio.
Okay.
Yes.
Melissa!
Right.
Is he all right now?
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. A little louder, please.
Okay.
Yes.
Then for a checkup for cataract.
Right, okay, for cataract. Oh, yeah.
And I was told to go back a day later for operation.
Right.
So having been so confident with doctors all this while.
Sure.
Without hesitation, I went back.
Right.
Placing hopes on the doctor. As
sure.
I used to believe in them, is it?
Right, okay. So,
Come 2 days later for an operation.
Mm-hmm.
So I went. He said it's a simple operation.
Right.
8 o'clock, I was pushed into the ward. Operation room, and then I was put on an anesthesia.
Right. Edwin, did you encounter any problems with that?
Edwin, what was the problem, Edwin? We don't have a lot of time left. What was the problem?
Okay, around 1 o'clock, I got up. I woke from there around 12 something.
Mm.
I was wondering why it took so long.
Yeah.
After the operation, 3 months later, I went blind.
Blind.
You went blind. Okay, right. Okay.
So, then I went back to the doctor again. The doctor said, look, check me and say, oh, I'm looking at the other eye. I said, what is wrong with the other eye? He said, this one, nothing can be done.
Mm.
I said, what have you in mind? He said, oh, the other eye may have to go for another cataract operation.
Right, okay.
And then I said, what the other do?
Yeah. Edwin, I'm so sorry about the problems that you're having. Let's see what...
But your diabetic condition has already done its damage.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I'm so sorry to hear that, Edwin.
I was on insulin, but if there has been a case where you did not advise me.
Sure.
Did you decide to take on court case? A case?
Okay, now, doctor, I don't want to go deep into it.
Hmm.
Yes, I went for another doctor. All these years, 13 years, I've been so disappointed that I never thought about doing anything. But sometimes I hold back, sometimes I just say, okay, lah.
Yeah.
Look at it, maybe it's not the fault of the doctor.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for calling. And then let's see what the legal lawyer, you know, on that side of things, see advice what to do. Because potentially there's a lot of these sort of like complications, misunderstanding before op and so on and so forth. So, Sharon, if somebody is in this position, obviously very disappointed about the outcome of surgery, felt that before the operation he had different expectation, and what sort of steps do you think Edwin should take?
Go back to the doctor, ask for a medical report, what was done for him, mm-hmm. and then take that medical report and see if he wants to see another doctor and actually assess what is actually wrong with him
right
now.
To get a second opinion.
Make a second opinion, okay. And then assess further. Mm. Because sometimes I think that what the doctor conveys and what the patient understands may be totally different.
Absolutely.
Thing. So, and medical terms, lay people may have difficulty understanding, so get the report, get another doctor to look at it and assess him, and then take it further.
Yeah, that's a great advice, isn't it?
Margaret is asking, in her experience, due to a baby who had serious brain damage, one of the obstacles to successful litigation, she says, is not being able to find a doctor who will testify against their counterpart.
Now, what are you saying?
Is
what
that
do
a
you
problem?
Think about
and
that?
And who decides on the counterpart?
Well, if you are a patient and you want to take up a case against a doctor, you will have to appoint what we call an expert medical expert doctor.
Who appoints?
The plaintiff's plaintiff will have to appoint.
Okay.
And then the lawyer will speak to the doctor and he will give. And that's when we pass on the medical records for the doctor, for the expert to assess. Not necessarily. In fact, one of the aspirations that I have is like we should have, like in England, we have the Institute of Independent Medical Experts, because they will not be biased for the patient or for the doctor. They will look at the case records and say if there is a case or not. In Malaysia, we do have doctors who will look at case records and to see whether there is an element of negligence or not.
Mm.
Difficulty, yes, I do agree, patients may find difficulty in finding a doctor, but there are doctors who are willing to look at this.
Okay. Is the judiciary becoming more assertive and proactive in Malaysia? Do judges understand these cases? I mean, it's a lot of medical jargon, Sharon, and, you know, how do they decide on these cases?
I mean, sometimes even the doctors themselves, within the same specialty, especially when it comes to very integrated kind of like operations or new technology, will find it quite difficult to understand. I mean, how would judges and lawyers overcome that sort of like barriers?
As for the judges, they have, I mean, the Evidence Act actually has looked at this way, way earlier, and in the Evidence Act, Section 45 allowed the judge actually to be assisted by medical expert who's scientifically expert in that area.
Right.
So an expert would come to court to assist the court, to assist the judge in areas which is scientifically difficult for him to, you know, it's not in his realm. So therefore, the role of expert in Malaysian courts is very, very vital. It is being used well in our courts. So even if the judge, being a layperson, do not understand, she can always look at the experts to give the input that she needs before she makes a finding.
Mm.
And both parties are allowed to bring their own experts.
Right.
So the problem is not the availability of medical experts, it's the clash between the medical experts. That becomes a difficulty for their courts.
And also, the other thing, which is, this is a long-drawn process, and many, many medical experts actually, you know, run busy practices and things like that. And then that's part of the reasons why Margaret was highlighting that earlier on, that many people don't want to go to court because, number one, you're testifying in front of your peers.
Peer.
And then the number two is that, it's a long-drawn process that is going to cost you.
Yes, cost is a very inhibitory factor because it is going to be high. The experts are going to take many days. Trials can run from 5 to 7, 15 days. But ultimately, it's about finding the truth.
That's
and it's
right.
about justice.
Yes.
And
so
I think
you've got to get used to it anyway.
Well, it's not as easy as finding someone broke my leg. And, you know, it's about going forensically at the evidence, bringing the experts together. And it's a fact find. It's about truth at the end.
Mm.
And if there is any merit in the claim, the courts will allow the claim.
Absolutely.
A litigation exercise can be detrimental, George, to your professional as well as your personal life. Have you had friends who've experienced this?
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think earlier on we highlighted that, you know, it is a culture that it's changing, it's evolving. You know, we see something like this. I believe that the litigation culture is it's changing because people have more awareness about complications and then actually have avenues in order to pursue. And on the other hand, because the doctors, a lot of time, in fact, 99.99% of the time, actually do procedures and, you know, deliver care with no ill intent. So when anything happens in complications and things like that, the doctors themselves actually will have setback in self-confidence, will actually feel bad about it. On top of that, have to actually be scrutinized for everything. And even winning or losing, the doctor themselves will face tremendous amount of backlash and also setback in self-confidence and also their personal lives.
What do you think would be a good way forward, Sharon?
Communication.
Yes, and for patients to also understand that they are indeed empowered to ask these questions.
To ask these questions, go back to the doctor. Go back to the doctor. Keep that communication going on. And I think once you keep that line of communication open, you can actually go to the truth, actually what happened. Sometimes patients are not actually looking for money.
Yeah. Well, to be truthful, closure. One of the things that, you know, I have a wonderful nurse who always asks me to slow down, because sometimes clinics can get very, very busy. And I really think all these starts with prevention, because the prevention starts with good communication before you even initiate any test or any treatment. Because my nurse also will always say to me, slow down, I want you to explain this better. And I really am grateful to her, because she's the one who actually tells me that, look, time is precious. At the moment, there are more people waiting outside, but this is important. And I really appreciate her help when it comes to that. So therefore, I agree with you, communications and also prevention obviously is crucially important.
All the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And doctors should never ever do practice where he thinks it's legally safe. He's trained to provide his care, and it should continue.
Medically safe.
Medically safe. Okay.
Well, before we let you off, I know time is running very low. Is it fair from your big book there, it actually say that, you know, it's because of gold-digging lawyers?
No, it isn't gold-digging lawyers. It's
gold-digging...
compensation.
Compensation. And then with the report to say...
incited by greedy lawyers.
Greedy lawyers. So is that
this
fair?
Come on,
you have to answer that.
Because politicians in your
this
game
is politician. Because
why is that? The higher the claim or the higher the compensation, the higher, the more you get from it?
Well, that's in US because they're based on contingency fees. They can take up to 50% of the...
Wow.
Yeah, that's in US, but that's illegal in UK as well.
Oh, right. Okay,
Malaysia.
So in Malaysia... I'm going to say this is awfully, naughty of me to ask questions like that. What is a typical cut of a lawyer when it comes to litigation?
I don't take a cut. We are paid a fees for the work that
for
we do.
For the fixed fee. So,
yeah,
we've
the hours of work is done.
All right. You know, for example, this... Daily Telegraph kind of like things to actually say that, you know, it's a most chunk of the lion's share goes to a lawyer. It's completely unfounded. It's completely biased. Is that true?
In US, it's known that they take 50%. In Malaysia, in UK, if you do that, it's illegal.
All right. Okay.
So remember that.
Remember that.
So they're the good guys.
If anyone tries to do that, remember it's
illegal. And it's like, the lawyers are the good guys here. So
thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts.
Even Sharon's not convinced.
Sharon Palani, medical legal lawyer, as well as Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.